welcome to Family Tree Talk, the wonderful podcast from the team at Family Tree. And that means, who does it mean?
It means that you're here, Helen Turvey, expert editor of Family Tree magazine and all things Family Tree related. And I'm here, Nathan Ward. Hello there.
Hi, Nathan. Less on the expert with me. I'll say enthusiastic editor. I feel that's a bit more accurate. We've got to keep it accurate with family history.
Well, do you know what? You're my guru, so I'm keeping it.
Oh, well, it's going to be not long. It's going to be a matter of weeks or months, and then all the scales will fall from your eyes, and you'll realise how wrong I get things all the time. Do you remember last week we were talking about occupations, and you said that you had a pattern maker, and I was like, well, you'll find that that's clearly going to be metal or wood or something like that. You know, it's not going to be dress patterns. And then I was quite happy, quite confident in my answer, as I am. And then as the days gone by, I was on a dog walk. I thought, I really better check that out rather than just tell Nathan information off the top of my head, which you then go to share with other people. So I did go and check it out. Okay, and I'm right and I'm wrong. I thought it's just nice to get it out there, start the session with a confession. Yeah?
Okay, go on and give it to me. What is a pattern maker?
So a pattern maker is what I said. It's somebody who's making patterns, so pieces of machinery out of wood or metal. And I thought for the period that your ancestor and we were talking about, I was like, yeah, I'm pretty confident that's what your ancestor will be doing rather than dress patterns. And I am right. And for the period we're talking about, the Victorian period, then I'm confident that that's what your ancestor was doing. I don't know if my voice is croaking out because it just can't bear the having to admit all these things. But the pattern maker, as in a dressmaker, which we'd all think of maybe today with the pieces of paper that you stick on the fabric to make your clothes with, if you make your own clothes, then that is also accurate. But that's a later meaning of the word. So through history, pattern maker would have been metal and wood. And then it's originally when our ancestors made their own clothes, they didn't have the paper patterns. That is a Victorian invention. It gradually gets more and more popular with the women's journals, particularly getting into the 20th century. So I'm confident the information I gave you for your ancestor was correct by luck. And because Elmer can't take you into account the period and things like that. But particularly as you have Yorkshire-based ancestors with such a thriving textile industry, that would be remiss of me not to just flag up that if we're talking about a 20th century ancestor in Yorkshire, then I should definitely be taking in all that contextual stuff and say, could be fabric and stuff like that. Anyway, cleared the air, all sorted.
But you were right. So there's nothing to clear there. That's spot on. That's lovely. And good to know some good historical background for me.
I've got another confession to make. Shall I keep going with the confessions?
You've never actually done family history before in your life.
Yes, I'm just here busy with ChatGPT, just making you laugh as I go. So I went back and looked at my farmer ancestors because his number of acres that he had was really bugging me, and the few number of people. He only employs one person on his farm. And I thought, that's tough going, even if you've only got 18 acres. Anyway, I went back and read it again, and it's 180 acres.
Wow.
Suddenly, he's still only employing one person. And then I looked at one of the other farms just below him on the census, and they have reams of farm servants and stuff like that. So the plot thickens, and I still can't find any mention of him in trade directories. I've been looking high and low. So I'm just thoroughly mystified by this man. His daughter was mysterious, couldn't find her, so then I thought I'd try and learn about him. He's now proving elusive. What is it with this branch?
Do you think like there might be like super high society? And like
No.
That's a lot of land though, isn't it?
Yeah. They're definitely not super high society. Like their relations, they're skilled craftspeople. Yeah.
Mm.
So he was a cooper. I found out about his dad. His dad was a cooper. His little brother who lived with him was a cooper, and his little brother was 15 years younger. And then I've been collecting all their siblings. And I think it's a case of two mums. That's why there's a lot of siblings. A lot of boys. Haven't had any daughters so far. Can imagine them being the rowdy house down the street.
Got their own rugby team.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my confession, that I didn't even read the census right. But I think that really is the end of my confessions this week.
I mean, that's not a confession, though, is it? That happens to all of us. Mm. You take one thing, or you're like, oh, that means that, and you'll just go with it. I've done it many, many times.
It shows how useful it is just to keep reviewing things, doesn't it? Don't think, oh, I've got that record, file it away.
Yeah, definitely. A lot like I was saying last week, I am better than I was when I first started, obviously. And going back, looking at these occupations, just looking at everybody on my tree, I know I can do better research for the early people that I just quickly got past to like get them down on my tree. So it's definitely good to go back and double check things and look for extra clues that you didn't know that were there before. It's tiring though, thinking about it, because I am, as soon as I've said that, I'm like, I need to go do that. That is my job. Well, I've got a confession. So last week, I said I was going to do a deep dive on Vernon Wood. That was going to be my big homework. And I guess it's not a confession. I kind of almost nearly have done this homework, only I failed dramatically at it. He's my great-grandfather, so he's quite modern, quite recent. And I thought, right, I will gather everything I can on him that's in Ancestry. Turns out it wasn't very much. He's fairly recent, or at least I haven't looked in the right directories or the right places and found much about him. So he's only on a couple of the censuses. I've got information about his marriage. And I was obviously searching for his occupation. He was actually the pattern maker. So it's all tying in. Oh, this is lovely. He was a pattern maker, but then later on he was a corporation lamplighter. But he had a quote, well, in my head, he had a side hustle as a canary salesman in this lovely tweed van with wooden wheels that he drove around and it had gold letters on it, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I couldn't find anything about that. And so I've had to go to source and talk to my mother. Not that I don't like talking to my mum, but I often do talk to her. But I had to ask her about it. I was like, Mum, tell me all about your granddad. And she didn't actually have very much information from me. And I was like, tell me about him. And she goes, oh, he was my granddad. I'm like, yeah, I know that. What else about him? He was very intelligent. Okay. And then I was like, well, what about these birds? He used to sell birds. He didn't sell birds. Right, okay. But what? Someone's told me something about birds. What's that picture about the birds? Anyway, it goes on. She said he bred birds and he also bred rabbits during the war. And that's it. That's the only information. All right, it was very high up in the Horticultural Society as well. So that's the only information I've got from her about him. And I couldn't find any of this on Ancestry. So that's my full stop, basically. She has told me that I should discuss it with my great aunt. But without being offensive to her, she's very deaf. Very hard to talk to on the phone. So I'm either going to have to like text her or write her a letter or something and see what information I can get from her about him. So I do actually have a living relative who can give me a bit more.
I think you need to act on that. And I think you could do two things. You could write her a letter, because it is lovely when you get a letter which isn't junk mail, isn't it? This doesn't happen very often and it's very nice when you get something like that. And so I think she'd really appreciate a letter. And then you could warn her that you're going to come round and do a surprise attack, or you could plan in a date and you're going to pin her down and ask her about the olden days. Take your phone and you could even ask her if you can record some things.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, she's all the way down in London, so it would be...
Oh, that's quite a big trip, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the letter, get that letter in place, and you may find... And you could go really old school, because what you want to do is you want the answer. So you want to make it as easy as possible for her to reply to you. So when I first started on the family tree, which is many years ago, then I didn't have an email address and people used to write letters. And we always used to say, please include a stamped self-addressed envelope. Do people used to write us letters? And the people who included the stamped self-addressed envelopes, it's easy to reply to them. It doesn't cost the company or the person any effort. They don't have to go off and go and specially buy a stamp, because with lots of us posting fewer letters now, you might not necessarily have some stamps at home. And they're really expensive as well. So you don't want to put somebody in the financial position of having to pay to meet your needs. So include a stamped self-addressed envelope and write her a letter.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I quite like the idea of that actually as well, because you think about it, that big metal box that my mum's got full of documents and facts, I'm not really going to add to that particularly. Whereas, because most things are digital, So it'd be quite cool to get a letter with some facts in, and I can actually file it in that box for future generations.
Yes. And what you said about your mum not changing her mind, but giving you slightly less information than you'd hoped. I've had that as well before. And we went on holiday somewhere for a few years, and I was convinced that's where my great granny used to go on holiday. So I always felt extra nostalgic about it. I was like, oh, that's where they used to go on holiday a century ago or whatever. And then I revisited the conversation with my mum. She said, they never went on holiday there. And I was like, oh, she's just like a non-event really, isn't it? But people's memories, they're fluid growing things. A memory isn't fixed in fact. It's subject to somebody being able to remember it. And facts get filtered through all different lenses of experience getting built up on it. So yeah, they're very, very vulnerable to change.
It's shocking as well. And then you sort of start romanticising the memory that doesn't exist.
Yes.
It's a big, massive story.
Yes.
Even Spielberg's on the phone wanting to direct it. It didn't happen, Stephen.
What you said about actually having not much tangible stuff to pass on or to add to kind of the family archive, that's so true. And that's something I've actually only really realised this week. So I've had my own little website, which I just have for my family, and I include random bits in it. So like family recipes, old photos, the occasional blog. And then I've realised that every week I'm finding out more stories, and I tell you the stories, and anyone who's kind enough to listen to the podcast hears the stories, but I might not see my family for weeks. They don't hear the stories, and the stories aren't anywhere else apart from on the podcast. So I need to write up these little vignettes every week and just pop them on there. And what I'm going to do, I thought about it, because being in publishing, we always have a kind of feeling like you publish something, it's perfect, off it goes, boom. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to set up a blog on whatever topic it happens to be. So at the moment, it's James Pickering and where was his farmland and learning about him. Set up a blog, put whatever I found on him so far, put a date like last added to or last updated at the bottom. And then in a few weeks or months or years, as things go by, I'll just keep adding to him, and there'll be other blogs on other people with, sometimes it'll be about their occupations or where they lived or tragedies or whatever it is. And I'm just going to have a public-facing, scruffy, work-in-progress batch of stories, because that's got to be better than not having anything.
You could even actually do a little mini publishing run and like have family stories in a little tiny booklet that they can read at Christmas.
Oh, that's nice. That is nice. Yeah. I could do that. I might do that.
It'd be cute, wouldn't it? So it's like, here's your family history, but just in a little story. And then at the front of the disclaimer, 90% of this was in my head.
Yes. Yeah, 10% facts. 10% facts and 90% surmise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. No, that's a good idea. It's like I said, that until you mentioned about writing that letter, it is weird to think that potentially, and we have discussed this before about like passing down your tree, and I know like Ancestry has sent me emails since I passed 100 people on my tree saying your tree's getting bigger. Who do you want to, is bequeath the right word? Who do you want to bequeath your tree to when you die? Put an email address in. So there is that there, but it's that physical rummaging. Like when you die, that you first thought, oh, all right, when I die, my kids are going to go look at my emails. They're just going to be like having to root through my cupboard and get rid of stuff, aren't they? So there should be a box of treasure for them to find, as opposed to, oh yeah, let's go check dad's Ancestry account. That's just, they want to find real things.
I have got some, and I call them memory boxes, and I've been collecting them for probably about 20 years now, and I was getting more and more of them. And then you think, okay, I need to be judicious about this. Otherwise, I'm just going to be a burden to my kids. So I've got a limited number of boxes now, and I have to, it's like, it's now on a one-in, one-out policy. So the boxes, I've got the boxes, I'm not allowed to accrue any more boxes. And so if I find something else cool which wants to go in the box and it doesn't fit, I have to then do an edit on the memories and take that something out, and it doesn't have the security of being in the box. Might still be in our house somewhere, but it doesn't have the kind of the cachet of being in the family archive that when Nana, Helen, Mum, whatever they call me, when I pop my clogs. Hopefully the things in the box, they're even tied up with beautiful satin ribbons. They look nice. They look like, ooh, what's in the box? Yeah.
Nice.
So I've got random things in there. So I've put car tax discs from my car. You know, we used to have car tax discs. I kept all of them. And I had a car for what the same car for most of my kids' childhood. And I often felt like I didn't have very much money. So I'd buy car tax discs on a 6-month basis, not a whole year. Because I was like, oh, whole year in one go. That's too much. Yeah. So I've got a lot of these car tax discs. And so I've kept them in there. And I've got our E111 card. Do you remember we used to be members of the EU? But in a few decades' time, like half a century's time, they're little snippets of history that each tell a story, don't they?
That's proper history now, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. My life just a few decades ago. It's all, and it's got things like the baby wristbands and all of that stuff. Yeah.
Nice. Hmm. But you've got to limit yourself to how many you're leaving.
I think it's just not fair on somebody else because we live in a world where we have so much stuff. Even when I was a kid, I used to share a chest of drawers with my brother and we would have a drawer each for our clothes and there'd be plenty of room in that drawer for all of my clothes. Yeah?
Yeah.
And then it's not like that anymore.
No. I guess it's like, oh, you must have been really upset when your mum died. You took 3 months off. You were sad. Not really. I had to read through every single memory that she'd ever had.
Yeah.
And then she showed me all the tax discs.
That's not making them sound so exciting. I thought a future artistic descendant might want to make them into drinks coasters or something like that.
Yeah.
We're not, we have better things to do with our lives than this.
I know. You can just imagine it. What the hell is this, Mum?
Yeah, I think I need to include some labels because maybe it's more meaningful when I say why I kept it rather than just really random junk.
Yeah. Or you could put handy suggestions. I've included this because we thought you might want coasters.
Oh, my poor descendants. Oh, yeah. I have got sensible things as well, not just silly things.
Yeah, that's good. I imagined you would have.
Yeah.
It is weird though, isn't it? Like we are going down a dark path, but like thinking about the things that you do leave behind. I'm now at the age where I've gone from being geeky by collector of everything to I don't want that in my cupboard. So I'm trying to go for a minimal lifestyle. And then I go to my mum's house and I look around and it's like there's plates that are probably actually have stories relating to my ancestors and there's loads of random things, books where they've kept notes of how much petrol they've used from 1985. Why are we keeping this again? Oh, yeah, so I can read about it when you die, yeah. Okay, cool. All right, I went to Cleethorpes that day. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
It is, but I think you're right that we need to say why those plates are special, or whatever the things are. They need to have a story.
Yeah.
Because otherwise that's what you really connect with. Like some people might have things which are of huge financial wealth and I guess they have their own value, but if they're just stuff with not huge financial wealth, then you've got to want to care about it.
Yeah. You need to know what are the important quote unquote heirlooms.
Yes.
As opposed to, I'm just going to have to give all this to charity when you pop your clogs to clear out the house or whatever. Wow, we're getting dark, aren't we? This is a really dark conversation.
Can I just show off with another cool story?
Go for it.
Because you mentioned plates, so it's your fault. So my dad has some plates, and they don't look very exciting at all. They're white plates, and they have a black zigzaggy line around the edge. And I've actually made a video of it, and I've actually even put it on Family Search as well, because I thought sometimes I put some things on Family Search. I don't know why I saved it on there, but anyway, it seemed as good a place as any. Maybe I recorded it before I had my own little website. Anyway, whatever. And so why he has all these plates was because in the late 1930s, his grandpa was working in Portugal and his grandfather was friends with the Czech ambassador in Portugal. And when Czechoslovakia fell to the Nazis, the Czech ambassador went, here, have the plates, I've got to go.
Right, wow.
I know. So it's cool, isn't it?
That's really cool.
Story, I'd be like, I don't want those plates. They're not very pretty. Whereas suddenly, when they've got that story, you're like, that's a weird little insight to history, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. So we need the stories with all of the things, don't we?
Definitely. I'm now doubting everything my mum's ever said to me, but we've got some plates. And there's two in particular. They're kind of florally edged. I don't really pay much attention, but I think they're kind of floral around the edge and then they've got this like murky jadey green colour and then lots of swirly patterns. It's a really rubbish description because I'm not really paying attention. But vaguely, I remember my mum saying that they were taken, this sounds like awful now, but taken by some descendant who was actually a servant in a big stately home. And so my mum thinks, again, she thinks, so she's made this story up, but she thinks they were stolen from the stately home and they're actually really valuable plates. It's an interesting story, but a part of me doesn't want to find out the truth about it. Like, if they were stolen, do I have to give them back? Equally, are we just like making out my ancestors to be thieves? It's scary.
But and it is searchable though, isn't it? So you can, it's one of those casting in the net wide things. You don't know who the servant could be.
Mm.
It's going to be a fairly direct ancestor, isn't it? Or it might be, you know, a sibling of a direct ancestor. It's not going to be a million miles away, sideways on your tree, I wouldn't have thought. So you find out who the possible servant contenders are, and then you're going to have to go to, next time the Antiques Roadshow or whatever is nearby you, go and take the plates along.
Yeah.
Get the skinny, as you say, on the plates. Yeah? Yeah.
Yeah. And then they tell me that they are, oh yeah, these are really valuable and they were stolen. You're under arrest.
Hmm. I mean, the good thing is that if she was a thief, she was a skilled thief because she wasn't caught. Otherwise, she'd have had to give the plates back.
True.
Yes. Not that we are condoning bad behaviour and getting away with it, but
she might have been given them. Who knows? It's. I do think my mum's made the story up and said, oh, these are just really nice plates. I don't understand why she would have these plates.
She could have been a much loved and trusted servant who was given the plates and... Let's say you found the servant, you could find out who the employer of the servant was and then get their will and see if the plates are specifically mentioned in the will.
Mm.
Oh, I've got a bit of a will alert, actually. Back to my farmer. Sorry to bang on about him. So I ordered the will and within 2 days, the will was ready, which is fantastic. And it was quite boring, actually. It didn't specify any cool things. Why is this will exciting? It's because it's Mary Ann Pickering's dad or not dad. Anyway, so he's the one who has the question mark over it, whether he really is her dad, because she wasn't allowed to use his surname on the sampler. That's the only bit of evidence we have to say that she wasn't allowed to use the surname. Anyway, so that's when she's a little child and about 1850. Scroll forward a few decades, we're in the 1880s. He dies, he leaves a will. I've got the will now, I just got it a couple of days ago. And I was reading the will through. It doesn't say, I bequeath all my beautiful seedsmen and farming equipment to whatever. I wanted a big list, like an inventory of stuff. I give my second best rake to my son, Joseph, or anything. It doesn't do anything exciting like that. But it does share out the money between his living children, so his daughters and his son. And one of the children is Mary Ann Pickering. And she's there with all the other children. She's now a kind of... middle-aged woman, she's married, it's, you know, she's there just included like everybody else, no fuss, no bother, no, like, she's getting just a tiny share and the others get more money, she's just there, equal status. So I'm wondering where on earth this embroidery story came from, because she is looking very much part of the family with no disgrace to her or anything.
Could the unpicking then have been something completely different? Maybe she was just grumpy about how it was done and then unpicked it herself and decided that she wasn't going to bother.
Maybe it all went wrong. It was really messy stitching.
And then she was so grumpy and she never went back to it. And everyone's like, oh, you need to do this. It's a family heirloom. In years to come, people are going to wonder what's going on here. And she unpicked because she was a rebel.
Yes.
Oh, man. It could be that simple though, couldn't it?
It could be that simple.
And it's that preconception, like, I've got this big story that's created. And obviously you've really embellished on this story about her being outcast and stuff.
Well, I've just wondered because I couldn't find her. Yeah. And then also her granddaughter, who's my great granny, was always really, really friendly and decent to everybody who had illegitimate babies, which is like nothing, doesn't mean anything today, but... you know, back in the day, even the middle of the 20th century, it's still a source of like consternation and stuff like that. And my great granny always made a massive effort to go and out of her way to take people cakes and baby clothes and things like this. And so I always wondered, I always put me putting two and two together, making five. I was like, oh, you do this. You're so ahead of your time, because your own granny was outcast because she was illegitimate. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's all up for grabs. It all needs to be investigated properly.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating, isn't it? It's like, it's cool that she's obviously got the equal share.
It's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, but it could potentially cast doubt on what you're saying. Or it could just be like, he really loved her and like said, yeah, you are my daughter, and which is lovely.
There was another insight as well. So he died in 1882. He's getting nerdy now. And his two other daughters were both widows. And so they just got left their money, boom. The son just got left his money, boom. But Mary Ann, with her wording, it says it's left, it has all kind of a posh old-fashioned legal language. And it's like, I'm leaving you this money, Mary Ann. It's not for your husband. It's not for you to be put under any pressure what you do with it. It's your money to do with how you want to use it. And he really kind of spells it out a lot. And to start with, I was like, oh, does he think, me, making more stories, does he think her husband's a bit of a rogue or something? Why is he labelling the point? And then I realised, oh, it's just because the other two women were widows. So Mary Ann's the only married one. So she's the only one potentially who's kind of under the control of a man. And it's exactly around that time, within a year or so, that the Married Women's Property Act comes in. So women are actually allowed to own property on their own account. Otherwise, previously, if you got married, all your property would just go boom to your husband. So you're left very financially vulnerable.
Wow.
But not as vulnerable as someone who didn't have anything to be handed over to their husband, but still more vulnerable than seems fair with today's eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's shocking. But he wanted us to have a fun. That's good.
Yes, that is good, isn't it? So what are we going to do about all of our research then? Because I feel like we have got a lot going on. We're juggling lots of things in all different directions.
Yes. Obviously for me, I've got the task. I can write to my great auntie. I think that'll just be quite a nice thing to do anyway, just connecting with relatives that you don't see very often. So I'm going to do that, see what I can get back from her. God knows how long that'll take. So it might not be for a couple of weeks. Who knows how long she'll take to respond. And if I'm perfectly honest with my research, what I want to do is I want to go back and look at the earlier layers and get them all censored up as much as I can.
I like it.
Because it's making me feel a little bit sweaty. I want them to be all solid. And imagine getting them all solid and then just not having to think about them again, because you can then just go backwards. I think that'd be great. But equally, I keep saying this, I want to get into Scotland, and I keep on getting sidetracked from that. Naughty Nathan.
I do think that this is what happens with me, that like you do some family history and then you do some more family history, and that the less you tie things up with a bow while you're in the moment, the harder it is to go back and do that. And partly because you've accumulated, in the meantime, you've accumulated more little heaps of information that you haven't quite tidied up. So I think your idea of making sure that you've tied everything up with a bow, such as you can, like there's always going to be more information which is going to come out and stuff. But with what's available to you based on your access to material and your knowledge of family history at the moment, if you go, I've done a good job on this, park that for the moment. It's all tied up with a bow. It's solid. I think that's a good thing to do.
Yeah. And it's something you can chip away at a little bit easier than having a brick wall or a rabbit hole to go down, because that's a lot more involved, in my opinion anyway, because obviously I can go in and find, I don't know, Eric Wood, check for X, Y, and Z censuses, link them to him, move on to the next person. It's all going to be very tidy. Me being me, I'll find some weird rabbit holes to go down anyway for all of them. I keep saying it every week, but I'm so changed. I'm so different. Part of me was just all about the whimsical. And now I'm like, let's get solid. Let's get these facts down. I need to make sure I don't forget the whimsical ones, because I've got some interesting ones that I've still not explored. Like, I think I had a great uncle who I found an RAF record for. I'm interested in that. I obviously want to do the Scotland thing. And there are a few other bits and bats. Oh, yeah, there's like rogue lodges and things like that. That mean nothing, but I'm interested in. Just because he's got a cool name. Anyway.
So, you know, with your paper note keeping, so do you keep like a wish list of all the things, you know, do you keep a list of your rabbit holes somewhere or how do you...
My rabbit holes are actually, this is where I get weird. My rabbit holes are on my research log, which is on a Word document. Mm. So when I do the research, I'm still using the research log to make a note of what I've done. If it makes sense to me is going to be another question. Mm. But then my actual paper notes are just, it's kind of repetition. It will all be on Ancestry by the time I've finished. Mm. But it's done in a way on the paper that I could read it and I feel comfortable that I'm placing people. And then I put little lines in between if I've got question marks and ask questions on there.
Mm.
But I think if I actually sat down and read my research log from scratch, because obviously it's not that big, given that I've not been doing it too long, I will have quite a lot of rabbit hole questions that I haven't answered. So at some point, I do want to sit, when I'm in the mood for a rabbit hole, I want to sit and write down every single rabbit hole that I haven't solved, spend some time with that. But I feel equally, whilst I'm in this meticulous mood, I should stick with it because I don't feel like it's naturally my nature. I like the fanciful. So I'm going to stick with the facts, be a bit boring and flesh these people out.
You have completely changed, haven't you? That's cool. I think that's really cool, particularly because you've got children and those fanciful, those stories, you know, that RAF ancestor and what they got up to, that's going to interest your kids much more than you going, hey, if my family tree's got a score of 9.9, they'd be like, good for you, Dad. Yeah.
I don't know. My kids are quite geeky. They'd be like, why couldn't you get it to 10, Dad? What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Like, no, I stick into my guns. Family stories is the way to go if you want to share it.
Yeah.
You want to get the rest of the family in. It's fine if you took it to another family historian, but if they're not family historians, you've got to have the story.
Well, my problem now is the two big family stories that I've gone to from my mum, one being the budgie story or the canary story, and then the other being the Mary Ann Briggs, Wood Briggs marriage 3 times. Both of them have been wrong. So it's like none of my family stories are true.
Well, they're not true. That just shows the importance of doing family history, doesn't it? Because nobody's written it down. It's not recorded anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's going to get forgotten.
Yeah. But I think I've said before as well, I've got like some, I don't know what level, great uncle somewhere or cousin who I've been told worked on the Concorde, building the engines for the Concorde. It's a nice story, but I'm terrified to find out if it's true now. But I think that'd be quite a fun one to do.
It does sound fun. I know what you mean. You do sometimes feel as though you're like not just a family historian, but like I am the family investigator and I've come to check out everybody's alibis and make sure that everybody's telling the truth and is where they said they were, doing what they said they were doing. It's not a very nice feeling.
I'm going to unpick this family till there's nothing left.
Yes, yes. Mm. Yeah, and the poor people who were living their lives at the time, they didn't realise there was going to be somebody putting them under such close scrutiny further down the line.
It sounded like a cool thing to say at the time.
Yeah.
What about you? What are you going to do?
So not any time in the future. Today, I'm going to do the first of my Scruffy Work in Progress blogs because I think for me, getting started on something is a good way to just get it done, isn't it? And then every week, just add to it. And probably nobody will see it and nobody will read it, but just occasionally, then somebody will be interested and I'll be able to go, oh, I can tell you about this. Go and have a look at these cool little... thing. And I'll include pictures of documents and maps and things to make it really easy to go down history lane for them. Yeah, because nice. My family, some of them like family history a little bit and some of them don't like it at all. Yeah. And some, a few of them like it a lot.
Yeah. But if you put it there, then at least they can all just choose to go and look at it whenever.
Yes. Yes.
Lovely.
So that's what I'm going to do.
Cool.
And that's going to be my mission from now on. Every week, just do one of these scruffy things like and that. What I've done through the week may sometimes just relate to one person or sometimes it might relate to a few different branches. It doesn't matter. Just keep building up on these scruffy blogs.
That sounds cool.
You have something to show my family for what I'm doing rather than me just staying up far too late, getting all bleary-eyed and nobody even to what end if I just have it in my head and in a scruffy old research log that nobody is going to want to read?
Yeah, I mean, that it's good. It's probably quite good for you as well, that, because then it's like, it is like a fanciful version of your research log.
Mm, exactly.
And it can help, you can reflect on that and be like, oh yeah, that's nice.
Hmm.
And if other people are looking at it, they can ask you questions that you might not have been thinking. Whereas your own research log, you only look at it, so.
Yes. Yes. That's my little simple thing.
Very good. I like
can't wait to go and do it.
Well, that's cool.
Hmm. I have started it already, but I haven't. It's kind of probably quartery third done. Yeah.
Very good.
Okay. So that's us. So I don't know whether we've got any notices, because there's one thing I wanted to suggest to anybody who might be listening to the podcast. So what I wanted to say was, so Nathan is a man of many hats, and what he has recently started doing is devising these really cool little things which we're putting out across social media, and they're just funny, quirky little questions. And one of the questions was actually inspired by the podcast a couple of weeks ago. We asked people whether they like using paper or digital to keep their records, which made me think, actually, Nathan, because we said, do you like recording your information on paper or in a digital format such as Excel or whatever? And then implicit in that is that people are recording their research in some sort of log. It could be that lots of people would be like, I'm not recording it either which way. I'm putting my stuff on my tree, but I'm not actually keeping a, you know, my own external record. So that's another interesting question. Anyway, so he's asking all sorts of interesting questions. Or another question might be, do you prefer researching your maternal side of your family tree or your paternal side of the family tree? Or another question might be, scroll back 100 and however many years to the 1911 census, would you have withheld your name from the census like many or some of the suffragettes did back in the 1911 census? So they're just quirky little questions to make us think about how we do our family history and little views and insights into family history. So if you like listening to the podcast, then come along and join in the conversation on our social media channels as well. That's the end bit of my waffle. That's what I was trying to convey. Don't you think, Nathan?
Yeah, definitely. It's just sharing, isn't it? It's just the community bringing us all together. And for me as well, just learning a bit more about history, because putting things into that context really does help. And yeah, it's educating me a bit.
Because we find it so fun in the podcast when we get somebody kind of comment on the YouTube, or all the people who emailed in to help you, Nathan, with your missing census entry. You know, we just get so excited. It's the highlight of our day. As soon as I get an email from a podcast person, I ping it right over to Nathan and go, Nathan, look!
Yeah, it's lovely. We actually had one on YouTube the other day, and I don't know the person's name, and they were basically just saying how their family tree is also filled with lots of Mary Ann's, and they chart at least four or five of them. And Mary Ann Firth, which is interesting, two Mary Ann Firths. I've got a Mary Ann Firth on my tree. Mm. And they also go to say that they prefer to use computers for their research using Root Magic, Calc function on OpenOffice, and Excel.
It's cool. Very, very cool.
We all do it differently.
We do. So, thank you, everybody, for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it. Join us again next time. And as well as the social media, then if you'd like to, and if you haven't already done it, then please do sign up to our e-newsletter, which I'm going to get right this week. And it's www.family-tree.co.uk/newsletter-sign-up.
I remembered that bit this week.
Yeah, well done. I'll be saying it in my sleep one day.